Hey, it's Dan Bova from Entrepreneur Media, and welcome to How Success Happens, the show where I talk to awesome people who do awesome things and ask the simple question, how on earth did you do that? So right there on his website, today's guest explains that he has ADHD, and when I look at his resume, you know, the diagnosis tracks. He is a comedian, a game show host, an actor, a podcaster, a regular panelist on talk shows, a former presidential candidate, and probably a million other things, a beekeeper perhaps. Let's find out what's going on in the world of Ben Glieb. Ben, how are you?
I'm great, Dan. I prefer the question, what's the buzz with Ben Glieb on account of all the bees?
Well, I was thinking about beekeeping because I was looking at your Instagram and you talked about funny story with David Beckham, and we just did something about he's a beekeeper. So it all connected in my head.
I didn't know he's a beekeeper. That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's like a very unnecessary hobby for him.
You got to stay busy. You got to stay active.
Try pottery. The people who choose to work with insects who literally have to cover every inch of your skin and then they try to murder you seems the wrong choice. As a separate note, I feel weird that I'm sitting closer to my camera than you are, and it looks like my head is gargantuan.
Well, we are in fact sitting at the exact same distance, so Ben, I think your head is gargantuan.
But... you know why? All the bee stings.
There you go.
Tied it together, Ben.
So, Ben, as I alluded to so expertly, you do a lot of things. So let's just say we met at a party or on a Zoom link for a podcast, and I asked you, hey, Ben, what do you do? What would you answer?
If I want to not get into detail and maybe sound cool, I would say that I, in all the various modalities that I work, I like to bring laughter and new ways of thinking to people. I just try to bring joy and also bring sometimes maybe a thought-provoking concept or two, more so leaning on the laughter and joy part.
Yeah.
And so that's what I do. I'm a comedian is what I would say if it's a quick answer, because as I said the last one, I didn't really love the way it sounded. Joy, what am I, Marie Kondo? Point is, I'm a comedian, but all the things you listed are things that I do, plus producing, plus writing, plus being an entrepreneur, plus taking on insane projects and producing them and showrunning them until all hours of the day. I was up this morning until 6 a.m. and then got a solid 4.5-5 hour sleep, and now I'm here with you. So
wow.
That's what I do.
Too much. You woke up to your nightmare, which is me. But no,
it's your self-esteem a little bit.
So all these projects, do you have like a personal way for defining success? Like that really worked or that didn't? Or how do you define success for yourself?
Success for me is if I'm able to create a product or a thing, a show, anything I've been working on for some time, if I'm able to do it to where when it's done, I feel amazing about it. That can't always be the case. Sometimes you're rushed and you're forced to do less than your best. But generally, I try not to put things out there until they are my best, at least not in a broad public way. And so I need them to be that, plus I need them to be successful to be deeply received and enjoyed by some number of people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That number, it can go up or down. Obviously, I want to have as much as possible, but a lot of the things I pour my heart into don't have enormous nationwide or worldwide reach, but the people that do enjoy them, that do find them, if they get deep value out of them, I consider that successful. And then I just blame the algorithms and powers that be for not letting more enjoy.
Right, right. That's great. Well, let me ask you about that idea about putting out your best. So one thing that we talk a lot about at Entrepreneur is people who are trying to launch something. So in your case, you're launching shows or a new comedy special. And some people get so tied up that they never launch it because they're like, it's not right. It's not perfect. So how do you balance that perfectionism versus it's time to get this out in the world and move on to the next thing?
I'm not the best at that when left to my own devices. By myself, my neuroses and my perfectionism sometimes will lose me years on something. You know, I recorded an album that I didn't release until 8 years later.
Wow.
Filmed my last stand-up special called Endings, produced by the amazing Kelly Carlin, George Carlin's daughter, directed by Christian Lamb, the acclaimed director. It's already been 8 months since I filmed it. We were editing it for many, many months, and now it's in a place where I'm perfectly happy with it. And now it's been several months because we're waiting for the right producers to see it, and then we will go pitch it and hopefully sell it soon. So at least at this point, it's not on me creatively, but it is on my people, I suppose, to get it out there maybe faster than they are. To solve that problem, I need pressures on me. I need external forces. So I need a team. I need deadlines.
Yeah.
I need people that need it, that are following up on it with me. So I have to sometimes just create deadlines. I'm an insane workhorse when I have an immovable deadline. I'll work 106-hour weeks and barely sleep. But when left to my own devices, I'm pretty happy in life. And so what's the rush? And then years will go by.
So, right.
That's my answer on that. And that's why as I get up there in years, obviously not as up there as you are, no offense, but I just mean that on account of
you
the hair. I just mean that on account of the hair and the small head and everything. People say you shrink as you age and something.
I'm a spry 80-year-old. Yes, correct. Continue.
But I just decided that ultimately, you know, I've had a lot of successes in one-off things, successes on things I create when, like I said, when they're one-offs, when I put together a team, put a deadline publicly and go. But I've been spending too many years lately letting, you know, my mom always says, sometimes you lead life and sometimes life leads you. And I really think you need to find peace in both of those and not freak out if it's the time when life is leading you. I think the vast majority of the world is led by life, and that can be beautiful and okay and can be a less stressful life. And my life over the last few years has been less stressful work-wise in that way. Now, I mean, quick side note that my business brain makes me feel to say in those few years, I still did pretty large things. I created the world's first virtual comedy event, reinventing live touring, creating millions in revenue, helping opportunities for comedians up and coming and huge names to be able to make money during the pandemic and the years after, creating community around the world. That's not for what I wanted to do for my life and my career. That was a great thing I put out there. My own self, I've been on a little bit of not cruise control, but just like letting life lead me and see what comes. And I've just come to the unavoidable conclusion that you can't assure your success. There's no way to assure success regardless, but you can't significantly up your odds of success if you do that and you're just rolling the dice. And life will be fine. Life will be good. I've had a great few years personally and professionally, but they aren't what like sets my soul on fire. They aren't the things that my heart deeply desires, because you can get things, but you won't necessarily get what you truly deeply want. Those things you have to go out and tackle. And so I've just 2 weeks ago taken on what will be the largest and most intense project of my life. It's why I've been up so many hours the last many days. Is I basically have just become a startup founder for my life's dream, and I'm creating the first late night talk show for the internet.
Oh, that's my Prime delivery.
What, already?
Only one thing can match the buzz of Prime's fast delivery, and that's the buzz of Prime's entertainment.
What are we watching?
Heads of State, that new action comedy with Idris Elba as the Prime Minister, John Cena as the President, and Priyanka Chopra Jonas as their only hope. Looks like a blast.
From fast delivery to explosive entertainment, it's on Prime. For only $8.99 a month, join now. Content includes limited ads, subscription auto-renews. For more information, go to amazon.co.uk/prime.
Really?
Yeah, it crazily doesn't exist. I've found this market gap. There's hundreds of thousands of podcasts, but there is no late night show with a house band and a monologue and an audience and all of those vibes that is native built for the world, for the internet, not on the three major networks or four major networks. And so I'm doing it, And we just started a raise. I'm raising 1.5. I'm doing it on a safe. I've had to learn all the details over the last 6 months about how to properly do that. We're doing it on a 12 million valuation cap, but an 8 million val cap for the first 750,000 that come into the raise. So I can try to encourage early money to come in and give better value to my investors. I'm figuring out all the details. We're getting the agreements. We're getting everything in order so that we can create a product that has a wonderful chance to make great financial returns for my investors and for myself, to help create culture, to help set culture in advance and evolve the conversation around the world and reinvent late night in many ways. And I'm creating a show that I think is unlike anything that you've ever seen. I will be booking alongside the celebrity guests that are common in late night, a different kind of guest that offers a value proposition to the audience. So in every episode, I'll be also talking to the thought leaders, change makers, icons, innovators, wellness experts, biohackers, relationship experts, people creating apps, creating modalities, creating practices, creating communities around the world that can improve people's lives, change people's lives, so that you can actually get something tangible from these episodes. And what I do really well is make those moments very funny, make fun of those people in light ways that exposes their things to the world, but also with a spoonful of sugar that makes people around the world willing to listen to and absorb these ideas and modalities that they might not ever be reached by, or maybe not for many years to come. And so this is a big part of the premise of what I'm doing. My band leaders, the drummer, the Black Eyed Peas, were going very big.
But
all that said, you wish you could just host that show and turn on a camera and get a guest to come over and do it. And that's probably going to be like 30% of the focus. Whereas you have to build full-on empire. You got to build a full-on business. You have to build a team. You have to interview. You got to find the right CMO. You got to find the right talent booker, the right social media marketing team, PR team. You have to convince investors to trust you with their resources and that you'll be able to shepherd them. And you have to just take it so seriously that I had to consciously choose to take my life from more chill and fun and flowing to something that will deeply be the work of my life. And the greatest pride I do, but something that you really have to be willing to put in those hours. I don't think there's a way to steer yourself towards success other than that.
Wow. That's incredible. That sounds awesome. When is it to start tomorrow? I want to watch this.
I wish it started tomorrow. We would be over a few hurdles already, but we just literally opened the fundraise 2 weeks ago. Investors are flying in. I'm happy to say Scott Galloway just came on board, which is really cool.
Wow. Very cool.
Because he's just, I guess, believed in me and this idea, even though he normally does not invest in seed stage or earlier things these days. He made a little exception just so that he could support me and enable me to share that he's involved. But we need to finish this raise because I'm going big. We're coming out the gate as a competitor to Fallon and Kimmel when we do it, and Colbert. So we need to finish the raise. As soon as the raise is done, I can put together the rest of my team and get our marketing campaign going, position us with the platforms, get my advisory board locked and loaded. We already have people coming in piecemeal. I'm making strategic choices and all those things. But my goal is that by September, this show will be on YouTube and all social platforms cut up, and will be something that people around the world can gather around and create kind of a water cooler moment again, rather than all of us being in our echo chambers, never talking to each other, never having a meeting place. So it's coming soon is the point.
I'm sensing you're passionate about it, or lukewarm. I can't really tell, but
I mean, I like bees too. It's a 50-50 split as far as passion for me.
So the business of it all, is this stuff that you've just learned over the course of your career? Did you like make a concerted effort to learn about fundraising and all these series that you're talking about? Is it stuff you've absorbed or you knew before?
A little bit of all of that. I have done startups in different ways before. Nowhere Comedy, which is now Nowhere Studios, is a startup. I'm still the CEO of it. We're putting it on back burner right now. I created shows over the past. I created the Telethon for America. That was a very rapid fire startup I did in 3.5 weeks. We went from concept in my head to big live event that was broadcast around the world. In those 3.5 weeks, I raised $425,000, partnered with Michelle Obama's When We All Vote, hosted it with Olivia Munn, head wrote it, got 95 of the biggest celebrities on planet Earth to come do it, partnered with VH1, BET, MTV, Funny or Die, Comedy Central, GLAAD, all in 3.5 weeks. So I'm used to doing very intense things under business structures quickly. But because that was a quick thing, it was to help the country. It wasn't all the structures of a startup. You didn't have to figure out the agreements and figure out your investor relations and figure out how to make sure you're getting return on investment for your people. And so I have some of my best friends are founders with multiple exits, and they've been great resources over the years, and seeing them do it taught me a lot. But there's no education better than just doing it yourself. So as I decided to do it, I just dived in and or dove. I don't even know which way. Is it dove or diving? I divified myself right into it. Just reading books and learning what it is you have to do. And also, God bless ChatGPT. God bless it.
God bless it indeed. I'm curious. I know back in the day you worked with Lorne Michaels. Did any of his show running skills rub off on you? Did you learn anything from him that you will use or absolutely not use in your new show?
I didn't really learn too much from working with him because he does it the way you probably should and the way I never will, which is make yourself very inaccessible to the people you're working with. He's a mysterious man behind the curtain. We worked together. He was executive producer on my earlier iteration of a show like this many, many moons ago. It wasn't for the internet. It was for television. We sold it to Fox together. It was called The Glebe Show. And we never got to make it, unfortunately. So my interactions with him were limited. By limited, I mean we never met. We were on things together, but he came on board, loved the project, and he had his team basically interface with me the whole time. So I just learned you probably, to be a real mogul, should not make yourself available.
Right.
Far too friendly and far too available to everybody.
Yeah.
And so my investors will unfortunately have my ear.
Yeah. Okay. And what about Michelle, working with Michelle Obama? Any leadership tips that you took from her?
Same exact thing there. As you may imagine, to that degree, especially in a whirlwind thing like this, she was not involved in the day-to-day of this 3.5 week whirlwind. Her people, she is probably on vacation somewhere in one of their many houses, putting money into things that she believes in. And so I created this amazing thing. It made big waves very quickly. And then I had an introduction from a friend of mine, Tina, who introduced me to the CEO and COO of When We All Vote. We had a meeting. They said, we love it. We're coming on board. They flew out. They put in money. They worked with us closely, with me closely for those last couple of weeks as we came to that show. And then suddenly Michelle Obama was tweeting about the event, and I did not speak to her or meet her, but she tweeted. And so people like you think we're besties, and I'm fine with that.
Well, you just ruined it. You just blew it.
I'm so sorry.
You could have said she's waiting next door. We're going to have some iced tea after this.
No, we are having iced tea now.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That was then. Got it.
Impressed with the show that now we are besties, and
we
a lot. We have ice cream and froyo, and we just tell stories. She talks about how funny Barack is. I talk about how I'm still single. It's really beautiful. I keep making my moves. She's like, Ben, I'm a married woman. I'm like, I know, but Barack is busy.
So I'm curious, on your show, Idiot Test, what have you learned about the human capacity to stay focused under pressure? Do you think you would do well on your own show? And is that a skill of yours? Can you stay focused? Because you're talking, I'm having a slight panic attack hearing about all the things that you're doing and the size and the scope of it.
Yes. What did I learn about the human capacity to stay focused under pressure? It's not people's strong suit, generally speaking. Unfortunately, people get a little freaked out. I've always loved the Kenyon Martin quote. I heard him say once during the NBA Finals, never let the moment be bigger than what you're trying to accomplish. That's how I always stay calm under pressure. I don't think people heard that quote, and people aren't the best at it. That's why, you know, Brain Teaser, very intelligently created game show that's available now on Pluto TV. Check your local listings, streaming everywhere. It's called Idiot Test because more often than not, people would find themselves feeling like idiots, but they're not terrible. They're okay. People just get in their own way sometimes, and you need to realize that any one moment, it can be big, it can be important, you can be extra focused, but you don't need to change the way your nervous system interprets it, because that's what gets in your way, because now you're having somebody who's not the normal you do the most important thing, and you need to come with your life of experience and your life of brain patterns to that experience, and not a brand new nervous version that is not who you're familiar with.
Right.
I myself am really good under pressure. I'm like, it's my best zone. That's why I put sometimes all of these pressures on myself and make things maybe more difficult than they need to be. I could just start a video podcast, turn on two cameras like you did. Again, no offense. I'm very proud of your production here. But, and then just hope it goes and have great conversations. Have great conversations and insane production and a staff of 35 people and just manage all of that. Because I just thrive under it. For some reason, under extreme pressure, I do my best, which is also why I felt qualified to run for president. I know that I can handle a lot of pressure. I do best in those scenarios.
Yeah.
And also, I thought maybe a comedian would be needed to take down Donald Trump. But the world has gotten so much more complex in the years since. And who knows what to make of anything. But yeah, so I would do pretty good on the show. Also, I help write all the questions, and so...
Oh, so you know the answers.
I know the answer.
I was going to ask you about your career as a comedian. You talk about under pressure. Is being calm up on stage, talking in front of strangers, is that something that came naturally, or is that something you had to develop? Second part of that, was there ever something that happened in the audience that freaked you out so much that you actually just could not stay focused?
That's two great and quite different questions. Staying calm on stage did not come natural to me. Being a comedian did, having a comedic brain did, wanting to share my twisted way of thinking and insights about the world I've been having run through my brain nonstop since I was about 3 years old or 4 years old. Knew I wanted to be a comedian since about five, but I also developed a very serious speech problem growing up. Stutter and a disfluency, and I couldn't even say hi to a friend in the hallway without getting incredibly nervous and in my head and anxious, and then not being able to say even hello. I had to tell teachers never to call on me, had to stumble through and very deeply embarrassing speech blocks and stammers and stutters, and when I was forced to speak in front of people in class or whatever it might be. And so it didn't come natural, I wouldn't say. I always knew I had this like comedian waiting to burst out, and many a teary moment growing up.
Yeah,
not
wow.
Understanding why I couldn't get there. So I had to figure that out, and I figured it out so deeply, I think, that now I can get on stage, even in an arena opening for Chelsea Handler or Dane Cook, or to my own sold out comedy clubs around the world, or live on television in front of my studio audience, or on the Today Show with icons like Kathy Lee and Hoda and Jenna Bush, and live to 4 million people, and my heart rate doesn't raise a beat.
Wow.
Probably I calm down when I get on camera. My heart rate probably slows.
Wow.
And I just feel more at home than possible. So I have figured that one out, but it took me quite some time.
In 30 seconds, give us the solution, because I'm sure a lot of people are listening going, oh my God, I wish I had that skill.
If you take my course, you can hear the answer, Kurt. No, I can tell you in 30 seconds, and I'm kidding saying that, but actually on the odd occasion do coach executives on their public speaking and people how to improve their speech, how to sharpen their things. I coach people for their TED Talks. But some of the secrets are you have to realize that you are not more important just because you're speaking. You're the center of attention just because it's your turn to do a service. It's just a service job like any other job. You're playing a role like serving fries or working in an office. You just happen to be amplified and raised up on a stage because that's the better way for them to hear and see what you're doing. People have very low expectations. You think when you're on stage, people are very critical. And in fact, they are not. They don't care. They're barely listening. They're on their phones. Maybe trying to get a nugget of information, if anything. They're not trying to get Barack Obama or Martin Luther King Jr. up there. They barely are paying attention. And then you take a step back and realize, like, we're in a planet of 8 billion people and untold trillions of creatures. You think what you're saying in this one spot matters that much, let alone how you're saying it. And then take a step further back and remember we're floating in outer space on a tiny dot in a vast unknowable universe. You think zooming into that dot past the 8 billion other people, you're pausing and the way you're talking really matters at all? I mean, it's an insanely egotistical thing. So you just have to melt your ego away and realize it doesn't matter. There's not really that big of stakes around it. And that realization will help calm you down and make you better up there. To answer your other, and people can ask me further questions or inquire about anything at Ben Glebe on Instagram. My DMs are open. I know this is an entrepreneur. I should have a LinkedIn going, but I've never really set up my account, and I keep having it on my to-do list for about 12 years, and I will get to it.
It's free. It's pretty easy. You just sign right up.
Yeah, but then you got to put stuff on your profile, and I'm just much more interested in my dating profiles being on
got it.
Is part of the answer to your second question. There have been fights that have broken out in my audiences that didn't distract me. Literally, I just started narrating the fight like I'm a boxing announcer. I had a guy come up on stage, get in my face, and want to fight me directly, and I turned that into a funny moment, and I have a microphone, and I wasn't worried about that whatsoever. I've had aggressive hecklers threaten to kill me. That didn't stop me from doing the show. The only thing that sometimes distracts me is if there's a very beautiful woman in the crowd that is flirting with me a little with their eyes. That can be a bit of a distraction. I'm still a professional. I'll make a good amount of extra eye contact and then still be delivering a show, and most people won't know. Maybe I'll do some crowd work with her just to establish a rapport and let her know that she can't live without me. But other than that, I stay pretty focused. The only thing that is kryptonite for basically any comedian, and I'm no exception, that really does make it quite impossible to go forward is bachelorette parties.
Oh, yeah.
Bachelorette parties are a nightmare. They are the kryptonite of comedy. And every comedian knows it. They come to your show, usually the 10 o'clock late show after they had dinner, and they're very drunk and they have their penis straws and they don't want to be at a comedy show. Only one of the girls, the maid of honor, thought that it would be fun for the bride to go to. And they're talking and they're not paying attention, and there's very loud chatter, and you try to talk to them to address it, and they're like, I don't give a fuck. Screw you. Okay. And it's just, you're not talking to a human. You're talking to a drunken mess of 12 people that don't want to be there. And it's horrible. That, nothing can stop me.
Wow. That seems like a rough one.
It's almost impossible.
Hearing you talk about staying focused and Kathy Lee reminded me many years ago when I worked at Maxim magazine, I went on the Today Show to unveil our Hot 100 list. And the number one person that year was Miley Cyrus. And as we sat down in our chairs, Kathy Lee asked me who number one was. And I told her, and she went, she's a child. And she punched me. And then we went live.
Oh, my God. And then you had to reveal that again live.
So that was, you just brought back that memory.
Miley is an old buddy. We're not close friends, but we hung out a few times back in the day, and she's one of the loveliest human beings ever. And
yes,
I'm assuming when Maxim made her number one, she was above 18 years old.
She was. Definitely. I want to go on the record with that. Yes.
And absolutely. I think Kathy probably was just jealous she didn't make the list. She's a very attractive woman, a lovely human being, has always been very kind to me. And I was on the Today Show for years, and I thought about it. She was single. I was single. And I thought about it. There were times when if I didn't want to not be booked again on the Today Show, I wanted to make my move. And one time she tried to set me up with one of her coworkers, which I declined. And I thought, oh, so I guess Kathy really doesn't have it in.
You're in the friend zone. Oh, man. Oh, man. All right. Well, Ben, we are entering the coveted and scary speed round. Are you ready?
Do we have to do speed?
Yes, we do.
Excellent. I was hoping you'd say that. I was hoping it would be you. You got mail.
Nice. Wow. You don't hear "you've got mail" quotes often.
That's right. That's what I do.
Or often enough. All right. So what is a habit you are happy to have and one you wish you could ditch?
I'm happy that I committed decades ago to writing down any funny thought the moment I have it, because that is how I write, and it saves me from having to sit down and write most of the time.
That's great.
A habit I wish I could get rid of: biting my nails, procrastinating, being a night owl, waking up late, staying up late. I have been fixing that, but then this startup world kind of bring a couple old habits back, so I have to meet with my life coach immediately. Overeating, not being able to control that super well, and running late a lot. Can you tell?
I said one habit, Ben.
You said one. I only had one good one, and then it's a bunch of self-criticisms, and there, from there, the comedy flows.
Flows, right? So I guess this goes with the sleep problem, but do you have a way to turn off your brain? And if so, what is it?
I do. It's few and far between. I know there's a movement these days, especially in the California sober world is what it's called. I don't know if you know what that is, but people that don't drink or don't smoke weed, but they will like microdose mushrooms all the time, or not even microdose, or do other substances. There's been a big kind of, I think, move from a lot of people away from alcohol. But alcohol, what I do enjoy from it is one of the few things that it's able to make me shut off my brain. It puts me in my body, relaxes me, and doesn't make me constantly deconstruct the world. So a drink here and there is very nice. It's basically just alcohol, having sex, or playing basketball are really the only three times that my brain is not thinking of funny things or analyzing the world or thinking of serious things. And even once or twice during sex, I have written down ideas.
I was going to ask you, is there a certain order to those things? You drink, then you play basketball, then you have sex?
I have sex during the basketball. And then I drink pre-game just so I get that like ease about me, and I don't see easily where the basket is, the hoop.
Got it.
The other teammates, where the people are. That's generally the order. Also, thank God for Siri, because mid-sex comedy note writing used to really involve a paper and pen and having to reach in ways that my body didn't want to move, other than the ways it already was moving in ways it didn't naturally have the ability to move. And now I can just go, hey Siri, create a note that says boom, 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 and it's slightly less uncomfortable for my partner, and in some weird way feels like a threesome.
That's beautiful. I love that.
My Siri now says, just created a note that says boom, boom, boom. Literally says boom, 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 and it's slightly less uncomfortable for my partner, and in some ways feels like a threesome.
There you go. That is wow. Tech. It's brought us so far. So finally,
it'll be the complete source of our destruction, but let's.
That's a different conversation. Yep. Idiot test. You're so good on it. Who in your mind is the GOAT game show host?
Wow. Hard to top Alex Trebek. He was just such a stalwart, such a mainstay, such a legend. But Jeopardy also doesn't give you a ton of room for personality to come through.
Yeah.
And so I also loved Wink Martindale, just a legend, recently passed away back in the day. Got to meet him a few times at Game Show Network.
Oh, nice.
And Steve Harvey is hilarious. He just really knows how to milk comedy. Our shows were on the same time on Game Show Network. And if I could grow a mustache like that and wear a pinstripe suit, some would say we were separated at birth. Yeah. I love his style as a game show host very much. What I'd love to see stop is a bunch of big movie stars becoming game show hosts. They don't need the money. Please leave the jobs for us.
Amen. I love it. Well, Ben, so awesome talking to you. And I cannot wait for this show that you described. So we will wait for it. And where can people find out about it?
Thank you so much. So you can follow me at Ben Glebe on Instagram. I'm also on Twitter, or X, or whatever people want to call it these days, or are forced to call it, at Ben Glebe on Threads. I don't really check that. Instagram is my main platform. If what I said about my show resonated with anybody in the audience who is an investor, this is an angel round we are doing, a friends and family / angel round. Please reach out if it resonates. We are raising right now, and you can get in maybe under the wire on that first half of the raise at a better valuation cap. That would be quite lovely. You can subscribe to my podcast, Last Week on Earth, that I'm also, for the moment, winding down and putting on indefinite hold on account of this new project. I have a new podcast called The Wrong Side of History, where I debate every week the politics that are dividing us with somebody who is on the right and I'm on the left, and we try to find middle ground and also just yell at each other. And that's it. Just my Instagram has links to my first two comedy specials, Neurotic Gangster and The Mad King, and to where you can find Idiot Test and all kinds of other things.
I love it. It's been awesome talking to you. Next time, maybe we'll hear about your beekeeping activities, see how that's going. But in the meantime, I want to thank you again for this. Is a great conversation, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
I really appreciate talking with you, Dan. Thank you so much for your time. And in our next conversation, I do hope that we dive deep into why my one true honey is those that make honey, and why it has left me without a honey for so long. Honeyless. I'm Ben Glebe. It's a stupid situation. Good luck.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much. That was really a lot of fun. I love you. That was very funny.
Hey, what's the biggest hurdle that you feel like is getting in the way of your success? Let me know at howsuccesshappens@entrepreneur.com, and I will ask our next guest.